It's time for Twig This Week in Google. We've got Stacey Higginbotham also joining us, Matthew Ingram. We have a lot of fun, but we start off with a little bit of heavy news around the congressional hearings with all of big tech involved. A lot to talk about there. We also talk about some of the Pixel rumors and news that's on the forefront, IFA and what it meant for smart home devices, Amazon, now for a split second, a $1 trillion company, and a whole lot more. This Week in Google is next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 472, recorded on Wednesday, September 5th, 2018. The T algorithm. This episode of This Week in Google is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Introducing Rate Shield Approval. If you're in the market to buy a home, Rate Shield Approval locks up your rate for up to 90 days while you shop. It's a real game changer. Learn more and get started at rocketmortgage.com/twig. And by WordPress. Reach more customers when you build your business website on wordpress.com. Plans start at just $4 a month. Get 15% off any new plan at wordpress.com/twig. And by DigitalOcean, the easiest cloud platform to deploy, manage, and scale applications. Over 150,000 businesses rely on DigitalOcean to remove infrastructure friction and deliver industry-leading price performance. Sign up today and receive a free $100 credit at do.co/twig. It's time for Twig This Week in Google. Leo Laporte is out this week, as he will be this week, next week, and then the week after next week. So you're stuck with me, Jason Howell, and it's great to be here. I always love hopping on to This Week in Google, talking all about Google. But this week, like, there's stuff all over the map, but we've got some really big news to dive into. Jeff is out this week, but we do have Stacey Higginbotham, of course, joining us. How you doing, Stacey?
Hello, I'm well.
It's great to see you once again. Also joining us, Matthew Ingram from CJR.org, Chief Digital Writer. How are you doing, Matthew?
Great.
Good. Good. I like just getting to the point on that one, so I appreciate that. Columbia Journalism Review, it's not just CJR. I should specify. It's great to see you guys. Thanks for hopping
good
on.
Good to be
today. Here. Yeah, it's a good day to do this because I don't know if y'all, I know that you probably are very aware of this, you two, but there's some big stuff happening in Washington, D.C. right now.
I read Matthew's article on it, so I was excited.
Woo-hoo.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many facets to all this stuff. I feel like the last week has been a whirlwind of, tech reckoning. Like, big tech is suddenly there's a giant microscope being placed in the middle, in the middle of a sunny day, right on technology. Tech is the ant that's
clear
burning.
It all up, though.
Yeah,
Trump's gonna clear it all up. Gonna get to the bottom of it.
Absolutely. I mean, things kind of started that way, right? Last week, I know on last week's show, you guys talked a little bit about kind of where Trump was at by the time of the show. I think the story kind of evolved through last week, so we should probably mention that before we kind of get into what's going on today. Trump was saying, better be careful. They're treading on very troubled territory. I think this is all the stuff that you were mentioning last week. He also ended up posting a video, which I don't know if you guys talked about, that showed the Google homepage every year during the inauguration. And on all of those years, there was a link present to watch the inauguration through the Google portal. Except in the video, it does not show those links present when it's Trump's inauguration. So this was used as fuel to say, hey, see, Google really wants to stamp out conservative stuff.
Yeah, and in classic Trump fashion, it was wrong. And just like the research, quote unquote, that he was quoting about how, you know, social media and particularly Google search is biased against him, which was also wrong.
There was a part of the video where I think it was like 2016. It actually showed an older logo because in 2015, Google had redone its logo. So, of course, there was all sorts of internet sleuthing going on as far as like, hey, wait a minute, that doesn't make sense. If you pulled this screenshot, it would have had the new logo, not the old logo. Therefore, was this being doctored? or I'm not sure what the explanation ever was on that, but it certainly cast a pretty large shadow over it.
And I think the thing, I'm trying to remember who made the point, but it's really irrelevant, I think, to Trump whether any of this is true or not. As it is so many times, I think he gains or he sort of wins if we all spend a lot of time talking about whether it's true or not. like I think his game plan, consciously or subconsciously, is just to raise doubt.
Yes.
Is there bias? You know, is there a secret cabal that is against me? I don't know, but we're looking into it. You know, and then that's it. Just throw it out there.
Planting the seed.
Right. Classic. Yeah. Classic discrediting kind of efforts there.
Yeah,
it makes sense. And he, I mean, as an individual, he benefits from any confusion he can sow in this manner. So it makes total sense.
Yeah.
And I guess I would like to talk about what the congressional hearings today, because are they still ongoing or did they just end? I know I am not watching them at this moment.
The House one was going on, I think, just before we started, but it was wrapping up.
And Google did not show up. No one from Google showed up, only Facebook and Twitter.
Maybe the invisible person showed up because there was a chair there with Google's label on it and no one sitting in it. So it's possible Google has some advanced technology and they were able to make someone invisible that was actually there, but I doubt that happened. It appears it's that like Google did not send anyone, which is weird.
Yeah, someone said we haven't paid as much attention to an empty chair as when Clint Eastwood pulled that stunt.
Exactly. I missed the empty chair.
Where he talked to it. It would have been fun.
Yeah, so the congressional hearing happening, obviously Google's absent, Sheryl Sandberg from Facebook, Jack Dorsey from Twitter, they're all there to sit on the hot seat. They had invited either Eric Schmidt or Larry Page to sit down at this hearing.
I think it was
hearing.
Sundar.
Oh, sorry,
I think they invited Sundar, yeah.
Sundar, that's right. It was Sundar.
Sundar, yeah.
And they instead offered up Kent Walker, who's the SVP of Global Affairs, to which they said, no, we need someone more senior than that. We need, you know, Twitter and Facebook are doing it. Why aren't you? And why isn't
Jack Dorsey has several companies he's trying to run, but he showed up.
Yeah, exactly. He's running two companies and he showed up.
why do you think Google decided to bow this out? What do you think about that?
They have a lot of other stuff going on and they may just be like trying to play one-upsmanship with Congress. I mean, let's be real. All these things, all these hearings are a chance for Congress to like grandstand and show off either A, how ignorant they are about how the internet works, or B, berate people. So honestly, I don't blame Google for being like, yeah, we're going to sit this one out. I know that most people go to these, but
Yeah, and I know what you mean. I have to say, though, I think they made a mistake by not
going. Yeah.
I mean, so even if Sundar goes, he looks, you know, nice. He looks ashamed or whatever they want him to look. He says, he gives his statement. He gives kind of vague answers to most of the questions, which is what Sheryl and Jack did. But he looks kind of contrite or whatever. Boom. Like, win. Whereas now it's just, hey, you didn't show. There's an empty chair. Look, Sheryl and Jack are busy people, but they came.
Google has historically been they're tech nerds. They don't show up for BS. I mean, they've done some BS, but for the most part, I just don't associate that with Google. You don't see them. When I see people at Google talking about politics and in the areas that I've covered, it is very technical coverage. Their arguments are very oriented in like physics and the way things work. And so it may just be that they were like,
At the same time, they spend tens of millions of dollars on lobbying because
that's what they want to send.
Right. But unfortunately, that's, you know, like, so now it became a big thing. Kent Walker might actually be the best guy to talk about the topics that the Senate or the House allegedly actually want to talk about. But he doesn't make enough of a statement about, we got the heads of these things to come and bow before us.
Yeah, I'm curious to know. I mean, there have been strong words, obviously, throughout this. And what was it? What did I read here? Senator Mark Warner says during the hearing that these companies have all come a long way, but they still have so much further to go, and that Congress is going to have to take action here. The era of the Wild West and social media is coming to an end. And I wonder if, like, I get what you're saying, Stacey, as far as Google just being like, you know what, write it off. We know what we're going to get if we go there. At the same time, like, Google has spent so much of its efforts lobbying to certain causes connected to this, not being there at a what could potentially be a very pivotal point for the future of these companies, basically removes Google from the conversation, from being a part of where they get to from there. Maybe they wouldn't have any power to do much of anything anyways, but I don't know. I wonder what that says about Google's kind of dedication to the
it doesn't say seriousness of what's going on. Google's lobbyists are still talking to the people, the senators' aides who are going to draft the legislation. Google is not stepping away from the equation. All this is Google saying, you know, this public remonstration, I'm not here for it. Mm-hmm. They're still going to have the same cred with the people who are actually making the laws when the time comes. And they may make a gamble on that, being like, yeah, we don't need to be here. But I don't think this is going to really hurt them. I could be wrong, but everything I've followed in politics and how the laws get done, I'm not worried. I wish what you said was true, though, because it would be awesome for, like, that to be true.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it was just a fleeting thought. I don't know how important these things end up being somewhere down the line.
I'm super cynical.
But if they are theater, it still matters that you show up for the performance in a way. Yeah. I mean, there could be senators who decide to make that, you know, their kind of go-to whipping stick for Google. I do think that Google is kind of trying to have it both ways too. They're trying to, you know, a lot of their public statements have suggested that they're not really a big part of this problem. That it's, and they did that at the other hearings as well, tried to suggest that, well, we're not really social networks like them, and so it's mostly a Facebook and Twitter thing, and kind of wave their hands around and hope that nobody starts talking about YouTube, which is a big part of the problem.
Is that the direct comparison, right? Like, it's obvious we're used to hearing so much about Facebook and Twitter as the networks that have been incredibly abused in this regard. I guess that would be Google's platform of worry.
Like, regardless of what Trump says about search and the algorithm and all that, that's ridiculous. But YouTube does have a problem, and I think they have acknowledged it to some extent and tried to do things about it, but they really don't like to talk about it. But it is a problem, particularly misinformation-wise, just the same way Facebook and Twitter are.
And that actually brings me up. So I was inspired this weekend by, I think it was a thread on Twitter, go figure. But it was based off of, I can never say, Zeynep Tufekci? Is that how you say her name?
Yeah.
Zeynep,
yeah.
She did an article back in March in the New York Times on YouTube being the great radicalizer. And this thread basically talked about, you know, go through your kids' YouTube accounts because this is where a lot of this. So I actually went through my daughter's history and started looking at some of the stuff that she was looking at. And probably 98% of it was fine. But there were two things that I was like, oh, this is like. And again, you guys know my daughter's obsessed with Star Stables, the online horse game. This was like a Star Stables fan group that was not radicalizing her exactly, but it was promoting some really crazy ideas. And I was like, holy cow, these people are nuts. And my daughter may not recognize that they're nuts. So I actually sat her down and talked to this talked about it with her. And I guess the takeaway there is, A, if you have kids, especially in this kind of impressionable age range, they really are putting crazy content everywhere. And like, it can be things like PETA, for example. My daughter had some wacky ideas about dog food for a while, thanks to YouTube. Some of them are kind of amusing, and some of them are like really scary. So,
and yeah. I don't think it's just kids. I mean, I think there are lots of adults who maybe their critical thinking faculties are not that great, or, you know, YouTube is just something they use for entertainment. And I know I talked to Guillaume Chazelot, I think is his name, a former YouTube recommendation algorithm engineer. And he was describing how, you know, it's only a couple of levels away from virtually any search gets you some wacky conspiracy theory, whether it's that the Earth is flat or the moon landing never happened or 9/11 was an inside job, or it's really staggering. You don't have to go, like, you don't have to go down the rabbit hole very far. You only have to click a couple of links and all your recommended videos are kind of nut jobs. And I mean, that's bound to have an effect eventually.
Well, and I remember coming into my first journalism class, actually, and the journalism professor, he sent us it was the equivalent of a press release, but it was on paper. And it was like, it was done in that format. And it was that toothpaste was made with sugar. And, you know, the whole thing, it had like stats and whatever associated with it. And then we did, and this was like literally the first day. And he's like, I need you guys to write something based on this press release. So I'm your editor. You just got in. Here you go. And most people just rewrote the press release and didn't question the underlying fact that it was, right. It was that toothpaste is causing too many cavities because of high sugar content. Very few people asked, wait, does toothpaste really have sugar? And so it was a really interesting exercise in thinking critically and whatever it is. I think we probably should do more of that.
Yeah, we definitely should. We definitely should. And I think a lot of attention gets focused on the big stuff, like Russians and the Iranians or whoever trying to manipulate this or that Facebook group. But I think there is a lot of kind of low-level misinformation of all kinds. I mean, vaccines and autism is one example. There's a staggering number of people, at least staggering to me, who believe that vaccines are bad for you. And they believe that there's scientific evidence to show this. It's not just the big stuff that kind of gets headlines. There's a lot of just crazy whack job conspiracy theories out there. And I think there's a very receptive audience for them. And these tools, you know, there were conspiracy theories throughout history, but you didn't used to be able to share them so widely and spread them so quickly for virtually nothing.
Yeah, the worldwide community kind of aspect that every little pocket of obsession or belief or whatever there is throughout the world, any number of people that also agree with that or buy into that thought, and the internet is a way to connect
that
them.
Up. That's the other thing that is really powerful is because, I mean, if you go to any parenting blog, you will find people who, I don't care what the science says. Yeah. When I gave little Jimmy his vaccine, he turned weird the next day. I mean, I'm not kidding. That's out there.
Right. And, yeah.
Anyway, so where were we going with all this? So Congress, I feel like we're in Congress because we're not
Congress
deciding
needs
anything.
To act.
Congress needs to act. What do they need to do?
What are they going to do? What are they threatening to do?
Right. So those are two different questions. What should they do versus what are they going to do?
Yeah.
And I keep trying to remind myself that there are actually, so yes, misinformation is clearly a problem. Russian trolls and foreign actors are clearly a problem, but the solutions could actually wind up being worse in some ways than the problem. And if we if we put so much pressure on Facebook and Twitter and Google to solve this problem, or we have legislation designed to solve this problem, we could wind up in a really bad place where the government's trying to legislate truth or legislate who's allowed to say things, or Facebook and Google are, effectively deciding who has a place to say things and which things are allowed to be said. And that's a dangerous road to go down.
Yeah, absolutely. This just kind of ties in with another kind of thread of news today about Attorney General Jeff Sessions, who has apparently been meeting with state attorneys general this month about these companies, saying they're intentionally stifling free speech. This goes back into the free speech discussion we had just a few moments ago. Their statement said there's a growing concern that these companies may be hurting competition, intentionally stifling the free exchange of ideas on their platforms, and that they're, they would move to do what you're talking about, to legislate around this, regulate around it, rather. And what is the kind of the long-term ramification of that from a freedom of expression standpoint when the government comes in to say, all right, well, we're going to gain control of this platform now, and these are the things you can and cannot say. And right. Yeah, that really
changes things. And I mean, it's all wrapped
up
with
big time.
It's wrapped up with Section 230, the Communications Decency Act that protects the platforms for speech that appears there. There's all sorts of pressure inside Washington to weaken or soften or even get rid of certain parts of Section 230 and force the platforms to be responsible for the content. So, that's a double-edged sword. It could be good in the sense that you could hold them to account for certain types of speech, but it could also be bad because they would kind of then go out of their way to remove speech because they'd be afraid of being sued or having, the government come down on them.
Mm-hmm. God, this is such a hard problem. I'm sitting here thinking, I don't want the government involved. Maybe if the government or we had a truly authoritative thing, but the business models are the problem. And honestly, the business problems are the business model is what got us in this role in trouble kind of in the first place, because it heavily incentivizes clicks and pushes up content that generates excitement, basically. So I'm like, what we really need is like a government funded encyclopedia. It doesn't really need to be government funded, but you basically, you need a place for authoritative information. You need a populace that is educated. So one way to deal with this is teach people a little bit better and add this to the curriculum. And the federal government does have a stake in curriculum thanks to, the Common Core stuff, rules, whatever those are. So that's one aspect. And then another would be something, I don't know, along the lines of libraries or a place where you can get authoritative information. Some people, if you teach them how, don't want to think for themselves, though. So I don't really know what to do about those people.
And I think that part of the problem is that people think they are getting authoritative information because they're reading Breitbart or watching Fox News. They would say on a survey, I trust these outlets to give me the information that I'm looking for, and they have the correct worldview, and so I'm totally taken care of information-wise. And they would be wrong, but they firmly believe that.
Well, and there are also a lot of people who, obviously there's a lot of mistrust in mainstream media. And so where a lot of people end up turning is places like YouTube, where they find an independent voice that they trust, that they say is more trustworthy than the mainstream media, arguably probably because their worldview matches the viewer's worldview. And that's just a big challenge.
I think that's why trust is so hard to... every media outlet says, well, we're trusted by our readers, and so that's what we base our business on, is trust. And I'm sure they believe that, but there's just as many people who don't trust them, maybe more. There are people who trust implicitly outlets that are publishing just outright lies, because those lies conform to kind of the way they see the world. And then Facebook shows them lots of other outlets like that because that's what it does. You know, it's a confirmation bias machine.
Sure.
And all the engagement metrics are, you know, oriented to. And I thought that was one thing that Kamala Harris in particular brought up, you know, that it is the business model that, and that's where I was going with the piece that I wrote about it, that why did this take so long? Why did it take 10 years for us to even start talking about how these platforms could be used for ill instead of good? It was because the business model didn't encourage thinking about that. All you want is clicks and engagement and comments and likes and emojis and so on. And what, you know, there's that famous comment from the former Facebook newsfeed engineer. What Facebook cares about is engagement. And you know what's really engaging? Bull.
Yeah, there was no consideration, it seems, on the scale to which a lot of this would happen. You know, it always seemed like no matter how successful an internet company was, there were other ones out there to kind of keep one from becoming, you know, a multi-billion user service like Facebook has, just as one example. It just, the scale that we're dealing with now is so completely different compared to anything we've seen before as relates to the internet. That poses a huge challenge. And I don't, maybe they should have seen that down, you know, years ago and planned for an eventuality of something along those lines. But apparently,
I think they were told, you know, they were told.
Yeah, it's not like so Mark complaining about this forever.
Yeah, for years. And so it's not like Mark Zuckerberg can say, well, no one was talking about it. So
we didn't know we were
going to
be that.
Lots of people were talking about it, about the potential downsides, and they chose not to pay attention to it.
Maybe the solution is to do what so many, Pew Research has a study and says many Americans anyways are changing their relationship with Facebook, just as one example. They say more than half of, in their survey, more than half of Facebook users 18 and older have changed their privacy settings in the past year. 42% have said they've taken weeks-long breaks from Facebook. 26% said they've deleted their accounts. And 74% of all the people they asked said they've done at least one of these things over the course of last year.
That's a lot of deletions.
That's a lot more than I expected.
Way more.
Yeah, that is surprising. I guess we'll see that in Facebook's numbers, which I would think so. Oh, crikey. You're going to have, if last earnings was so terrible, imagine this coming one.
Yeah.
But the question is, are they getting enough users in new markets to sort of make up for, you know, a certain percentage deleting? And
it feels like they're running out of really highly internet connected places. Like I'm like, there's 7 billion people on Earth. They estimate like 3.2 don't have access to high quality internet connections that are kind of constant. And Facebook is at, where is it? Anyone? How many members it has?
I don't know. Facebook.
1.2? 1.4?
2.2, I think.
2.2.
Okay, 2.2 billion. So that's a pretty narrow gap. And you got to think some of those people, A, probably aren't that interested, or B, might be in authoritarian regimes, so they can't get on it. So yeah, they might be hitting close to their ceiling. That's why they're like, hey, let's invent new ways to get people on the internet.
Yep.
That's why they want to get into China so badly.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's changing. I mean, it really seems like a lot of the younger users are the ones who are more likely to do these account deletions and everything. There's actually also another story in here that's totally related down at the bottom on Generation Z about this kind of growing desire to log off, to disconnect. You know, they're finding that their relationships in the real world are not as fulfilling as they should be, and they kind of point to the use of these social media platforms as part of the reason why. So in many ways,
that
it's
would be
like
awesome.
This retraction is happening. I don't know how.
Yeah,
I wish my kid would read that article.
I was thinking if we only have one really truly screwed up generation, which would, I guess, be the millennials. That would be okay. We figure out
in the grand historical arc. There will be some sort of chart, and it'll be like now will be like this huge dip, and then it'll be back up and rise.
It'll even out as we figure out. I mean, because I do think, I mean, these things do take a little bit of time to be like, whoa, that probably wasn't good for anybody. I mean, everything from, you know, I don't know, television, you know, we had to learn some moderation and things. I mean, we had to build a rating system and
But there's more television than there's ever been.
I'm not saying that there may not be more social media than ever, but right. I think we will figure out ways to police it. It may not be the right words, but to label it or to help people understand the effects on them.
Yeah,
right?
Form healthier relationships with it.
Yeah, and it does feel like we're kind of, I mean, we are still so early in even the web, let alone social networks. I mean, it's like a fraction of a second in sort of internet time or world time. And so I think in a lot of ways we are still trying to figure out how does this work, like the early days of the telephone or the telegraph or television. Or, you know, I was reading about, I think it was revolving doors were apparently a huge social policy issue because no one could figure out how to use them. And there was no kind of...
What is the polite way to go in and out of a revolving door?
There was no etiquette. So people had to like research it and then decide, oh, this is how you go through a revolving door. And it sounds ridiculous now, but maybe we're still developing kind of, you know, a common etiquette or language about how to do these things. And we're like right after the invention of gummy bears or something, everybody wanted to eat gummy bears all day long. And, you know, eventually people figured out that's not really good.
Sticky sugar is not a good thing for your teeth. Yeah. Think about how many relationships have broken up over whether to roll the toilet paper over the roll or under. You know, they got to get figured out at some point. I don't know if anyone still knows the answer.
Everybody knows over the top is right.
Over the top.
Everybody knows that. I think that's established.
Yeah.
That is established.
All right.
For my daughter.
That's settled. Right. That's settled case law. The top. As far as that's concerned. All right. That's about as political as I think today's show is going to get. Maybe after the break, we'll have some stories that aren't quite so politically charged. But it's the top news, I would say, of the day. So absolutely necessary to discuss. So we got it out of the way for those of you trying to avoid the politics on the show. Let's take a break and thank the sponsor of this episode. And then we'll get back into more of this episode of This Week in Google. It is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage. Buy Quicken Loans. You've all kind of been paying attention, I'm sure, to interest rates. There's a whole lot of rising happening. They're expecting more rising to happen by the end of the year. So the trend is up right now. There's a lot of unpredictability when that happens. You don't really know what's going to happen. You don't know if now's the time to jump or whether you wait to buy a home. That causes anxiety. It's not the easiest thing to kind of maneuver or manage. So, you know, you want someone that's going to help you through the process and inspire confidence that you're doing the right thing. Well, our friends at Quicken Loans are doing something about that, and they call it the power buying process. It's actually very simple and very powerful for you. Step one is you answer a few simple questions, and they're going to then check your credit for a pre-qualified approval. So step two, Quicken Loans will verify your income, your assets, and your credit. It only takes less than 24 hours to do that, and they'll give you a verified approval. And this actually gives you the strength of a cash buyer. And that's the best. When you're looking for a home, being a cash buyer is as good as it gets. So it's super powerful to have that. Step three, once you're verified, you qualify for their all-new exclusive Rate Shield approval. Now, what that means is that they're going to lock up your rate for up to 90 days while you shop. So whatever the rate was right then, it's locked in place. If the Fed raises interest rates, your rate is not going to go up within those 90 days. And then here's an even better part. If rates happen to go up, like I said, it's going to stay the same. But if rates go down, your rate also drops. So no matter what, you win. And that's pretty awesome that they can do that. It's the kind of thinking that you'd expect from America's largest mortgage lender. So to get started, you want to go to rocketmortgage.com/twig. Rate Shield approval is only valid on certain 30-year purchase transactions. Additional conditions or exclusions may apply, so you want to check that out, based on Quicken Loans data in comparison to public data records. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. That's rocketmortgage.com/twig, T-W-I-G. Put that in there, get it all locked up, and enjoy your new home. when the dust settles, anyways. All right. So, moving from kind of what's going on in the congressional hearings on to other Google things, which feel maybe a little less important. Are either of you guys kind of anticipating the new Pixel announcements, whenever they may be, the new Pixel phones?
I mean, I want to see them, but I'm not going to buy a new phone, I don't think.
What is your phone right now?
It's a Pixel 2, so I'm a diehard 2 years, because I'm not
obsessive over updating phones. I get it.
Yes. Yeah. Sorry.
I think if I didn't do it for a living, if I didn't do, you know, review phones here for a living, I probably would do the same.
I mean, ask me how often I change my thermostat or light switches, and I got a totally different answer.
Every 2 weeks.
Wow, that's so opposite for me.
So yeah, I'm like, I acknowledge that. Yeah.
What about you, Matthew? What are you using right now?
I have the Samsung S7, which is smashed beyond belief.
All right,
and
you're ready.
Does not function well in a bunch of different ways. So yeah, I'm definitely ready to upgrade.
All
right. And I'm really interested in the Pixel. I've always liked the phones. It sounds like it's going to be a great phone. To be honest, I was looking at you've probably talked about these, the Huawei P20. I was looking at that purely for the camera functions.
Yeah. Yeah, the P20 has a great camera, from what I understand. I haven't had a much personal experience with the P20, but... does Huawei have significant retail presence in Canada? Like, so do you see Huawei out in the wild in Canada?
You see them, yeah. And in fact, I know a significant number who have them. Okay. They used to be in Best Buy, but of course they're not going to be anymore.
Right.
So that's probably going to reduce their visibility quite a bit.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Huawei's a gigantic brand worldwide. It's just here in North America where it's kind of pinched off, you know, as far as that's concerned. It's harder for it to...
I did have people say, oh, you can't buy a Huawei. That's a Chinese phone. You know, they're going to be tracking your text messages or whatever. And I said, you know, I probably should care about that, but I don't. So, like, if they want to... save my text messages, or I'm not involved in any kind of, you know, secret government projects that I know of. So I just don't think they would learn anything interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it sounds like you're in the 2 year camp then as well, with your device. Yep. So that's good.
Yeah.
That's good.
Your 2 years are up.
Yeah. if the smash screen wasn't any indication. And maybe a whole bunch of other host of reasons. But so basically, the Pixel 3, I think you guys talked last week about this whole like Ukrainian black market like leak of Pixel 3 phones. So we basically know everything about it at this point.
We do. Now, I was curious, does it still has the fingerprint reader on the back? But yes. I know some of the Samsung phones are, according to somebody, having them on the front.
So Samsung... Well, there's been an ongoing rumor, and I don't know when this is going to happen or if Samsung's even going to follow through on it, but it's possible that it would happen with the S10, that they would have a fingerprint sensor in the front underneath the display. So it wouldn't be a separate button on the front. It would just exist underneath the glass, which there are other phones that have done this, but mm-hmm. not really a mainstream, like, you know, premium smartphone from one of the major manufacturers has done this yet. And I think the rumor is that there have been patents. Well, that's not a rumor. There have been patents that Samsung has filed for in-display fingerprint sensing. The question is whether that's actually going to appear in one of their future phones.
Okay. I would buy the Pixel 3 if it had wireless charging, like good wireless charging.
I think you'll have wireless charging.
Yeah, it looks like they might. And so then I'm like, oh, that kind of changes things for me.
Yeah. And see, wireless charging is one of those things that I've never really kind of
Really?
I mean, I've used it a handful of times, but it's nothing that I've invested in, let's say. I still plug
it. Isn't it always slower? Like, is it going to be anywhere
close to?
Yeah.
So it's a good overnight on your night table.
Yeah, exactly. That's when I use it, is overnight.
Yeah.
I just want to, like, get a charging pad, basically, and stick it somewhere, and then be able to put my headphones, my watches, my everything. Because, like, you know, right now I have many different varieties of charger. And
well,
and
there
like
was it. That thing, right? There was the pad, but you had to add these
stickers. I'm not going
to
add stickers.
Yeah.
Or no a case, a certain case.
No.
Not stickers.
Don't add stickers. Samsung, actually, on their at their Note 9 announcement, they showed off a piece of hardware that was like a dual charging station, so it would charge your phone and your watch. But yeah, I mean, I think the dream, the hopeful destination is some sort of larger pad that is big enough to drop three or four devices on.
Well, wasn't someone was working on wireless charging through the air, were they not? There was a startup.
Oh, U-Beam.
Because I remember reading about it. Yeah. Whatever happened to that?
They're probably still
like
working
Serato
on it.
Type stuff? Okay.
The hardest part about wireless charging through the air is it tends to generate, you know, it's not heat. As efficient one, and it generates heat. So you'd hate to cook people. Which
we do have. Of course, Tesla was working on wireless electricity, and we already have that. It's called Lightning, and it's very unsafe. So yeah, that didn't work out so well.
That's true. Yeah,
I'm you know,
a little frightened of walking into a room where everything inside of
you're
it is charging.
In wireless rays. Yes. Yeah.
You know, there actually are very,
for reason or not,
very low power chips that use Wi-Fi to recharge things. So it's an energy harvesting mechanism that people are researching using Wi-Fi to. But it's super low power. It's not like it's not going to be charging your phone anytime.
Huh.
But maybe your watch.
But it wouldn't hurt.
It'd be more like a motion sensor or something that maybe not even something that big, but like a temperature sensor.
Right.
I have to admit, it bugs me. So I have the Moto 360, a second generation watch, and I, you know, I'm always not where the charger thing is. And so then I wish I could just put it down or even plug it into a regular USB or do something instead of like you're in the car or something. Well, I'm not going to bring the little stand thing that charges it.
Yeah, that is super annoying. That like hockey puck stand up thing that you have to set it into and super proprietary.
Yeah. No super proprietary.
No.
But everybody wants proprietary. So we all want it to not be proprietary and they all
only
want
the people making it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We are like consumers are so screwed. I'm like, God, tech. We really just like hose that up real bad.
Yeah.
Anyway.
our track record's not so hot right now. So Pixel 3 XL apparently hit the FCC. So, and in that filing, it looks like they did call out something that alludes to the wireless charging. So I think you're going to be happy with that. And I'm hearing a lot of people like the 3 XL has. Well, on All About Android, we don't call it a notch. We call it a bucket.
It's
a pretty deep notch.
A bucket is a deep notch. Thank you.
Right.
Got it.
So it has a bucket up at the top, but the Pixel 3 non-XL does not. So I'm seeing a lot of people who are like seeing these early leaks and thinking, I'm going to go for the smaller one. You know, you make some concessions there in the display.
Why does it even have a notch?
But
or gouge or bucket.
Why does the larger one have a notch?
Yeah.
I mean, I think they're doing it because Apple did it. They're doing it because there's this constant push towards bezel-less. And if you have a notch, then you can get the majority of the display up there close to the bezel.
Yeah. I just find it fascinating that a notch, which is something arguably negative, is people are copying it because Apple has one. So if
people hated when Apple dumped the headphone jack, but many companies copied that too.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just fascinating.
Like, extra revenue.
Everyone can hate it, and then everyone copies it because it's Apple.
Yeah.
People get used to it with Apple, and then they think, this is weird. This phone has no notch.
We're back to market power and consumers getting hosed again. See, it was so short. We were like, boom.
but also, it's how people can perceive things differently. So if Apple does it, it's got to be good.
Right.
So even the fact that it's actually a kind of kludgy solution to something,
right,
it looks great because Apple does it. So then everybody perceives it as a benefit somehow, even though it's clearly not.
It's a transitional thing, yet I think there are some hardware manufacturers that see it as a gamble, right? Like Apple has a pretty good track record of doing certain things that may or may not have been done before, but then making it more popular just by doing it. And so I'm sure some of these manufacturers are like, well, let's take a bet on some of our devices. We'll do that too. And if our sales are really impressive as a result, then we know we bet correctly. Yep. You know,
this is how I feel like high heels must have happened.
I just want to point out that high heels were originally a thing for men,
and
that women actually adopted them.
I did not
they
know that.
To. Yeah,
really.
They were mostly for riding horses, and so a lot of royalty had high heels.
Oh, interesting!
Yeah. And so they kept your clothes out of the mud.
True. And short
they
people.
Showed that you did not need that you didn't have to walk very far. It was all part of this. I'm so lazy. Not lazy. I'm so privileged. I don't have to walk. And kind of like with the Chinese long fingernails, I'm so privileged. I don't have to use my hands. Work.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Okay.
Are either of you smartwatch wearers?
Oh,
well, you mentioned the Moto. You mentioned the Moto 360. Matthew, what about you?
I know it's not super popular, but
well, it's just
I
not
like
new.
It.
Yeah.
Exactly. The main reason I got it was because it was cheap and it was circular, and I didn't want a watch that was square. So
yeah. And do you,
I use a Fitbit?
You have the Fitbit. Okay. Well, apparently, all these rumors. I don't know why we expect that rumors are going to happen, because there was an exclusive that the Pixel Watch, from IFA anyways, that the Pixel Watch is not going to happen. It's not going to happen this year anyway. So if you're holding out for a Pixel Watch at the event that still is not yet announced, even though I feel like we know so much about it already, wait longer, because there will be no Pixel Watch.
I don't know why don't they have one yet?
Like, I thought it was Qualcomm had they use a Qualcomm chip in reference design in there. So some people were talking about how Qualcomm didn't have a chip ready, but then Qualcomm did release their chip. Mm-hmm. So I don't know what the holdup is. It may just be like, screw it. Nobody's buying this thing. Apple's won this war with their inexplicable Apple Watch. Remember how we used to all make fun of it back in the day when it came out?
I still do make fun of it.
I mean, I don't need it, but you know.
Yeah. Well, Google says they're not interested in developing a watch yet because there's no perfect watch for everyone.
There isn't.
Well,
and this is what's going to happen if we let the tech people like dictate.
Right.
We're going to suddenly be living in a world where, driven by, instead of customization and kind of craft sensibilities and artisanal blah, 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 may not make sense and feels kind of pretentious. But right now we do have lots of options in things like jewelry and clothing and furniture. And in the tech world, that's terrible. You know,
exactly.
So unless we get like this really huge push towards modularity or modules that you can just pop into things and design that kind of functionality into everything. So your appliances, your whatevers, you're going to get this weird, stupid tech obsolescence focused, change it every couple years model. And we're going to hate life.
And this is my sort of nightmare of, you know, I feel like everything is going to look like the instant messaging world did when you couldn't talk to another person unless you used their instant messaging service. So when there were three or four and they were all battling, except it'll be light bulbs and stoves and cars and glasses and implantable chips or whatever. And so you won't, you know, I think that's the world Apple would like to have, where you just use Apple stuff. And if you don't use Apple stuff, too bad. And if you want your stuff to work with some Apple stuff, forget it.
Mm-hmm.
You guys have depressed me again.
Why do we keep going here?
Things
are going to be great. Things are going to be great. Everything is going to work properly. Someone I know mentioned that it was a key design failure that Jean-Luc Picard has to specify what T he gets every single time. And, you know, I never thought of that, but it is. Shouldn't it know by now? How many cups of tea has the man ordered, for God's sake? You know, it's the 25th century.
Yeah, there should be some sort of predictive tea algorithm in there.
Yeah, come on.
It's like, oh, you've ordered this for the last 10 days.
It should just come out at 4:30, right? Earl Grey tea,
I listened to a Google product engineer talk about this. This is actually really interesting. Mark Spates, not Jean-Luc Picard, but it's so close. So it's talking about when to use algorithms to predict things and take action. So he said, article so I don't screw up his percentages, because this was actually really, it ties directly to what you're talking about.
Yeah.
If you are 90, okay. Talk about something while I Google. Go.
This is what happens when Stacey Googles. Plus,
okay, here we go.
Plus, Earl Grey tea. Why?
Well, okay, yeah. I'm not going to question his tea things. His tea. So he says he divides it into three things. So a curated experience. So think about things like Netflix or suggesting songs from Pandora. He says your AI model should be 70% confident it has the quote-unquote right answer.
Oh, okay.
The next one is a corrective experience. So like if like a light is on and there's like a motion sensor on a light is his example. So if you're sitting there and the lights go off, you can actually wave your hand and the lights turn on. So you can correct it pretty easily. So in those cases, you need to have an 85% confidence interval. Right. And if you actually want to do something that's going to cost money for something or cost a resource, so like dispensing a cup of tea, you need to have that be like 99% accurate.
That's fair.
And that's predictive.
But I would argue Jean-Luc beats that test. I mean, he drinks a billion cups of tea. He's been a starship captain for probably years. You know, they should figure out the tea is... what he wants.
Yeah, he's old enough, so his age could come into the factor, into the math equation.
But that's a great point. About predictability.
Yeah, he says it needs to be 5-9's confidence interval. So yeah, that's ridiculous. I mean, most people, you won't even have that amount of data to even give them that. Jean-Luc Picard, yes.
Just before he dies, he'll be like, here's your black tea cold, and then he'll die.
But yeah, I mean, I think I know that we're always like, oh, this should anticipate this. But as someone who's built, like, who's tried to program automations in my house and stuff, this is actually it's a tough problem to solve. And I don't think, I mean, I know that's where we're like, oh, our house should just know this. But.
Right. Well, and I do know I don't want the people running the advertising algorithms to do that, because then they'll just suggest things that you just bought, or they'll suggest the toe fungus cream or whatever that they get paid a lot to suggest. Ooh. You know, there's no, like, those ads, the amount of data that Facebook takes in should be able to serve me the most targeted ads, and I still get crap. Mm-hmm. And it's still, would you like to buy the pair of shoes that you literally just bought?
That's always the example, but it's always so true. Like, still that, and that seems like the easiest one for them to like
And every website does it.
Yeah,
every website you go to.
Maybe you guys just don't shop online enough. I see a variety of products based on all of my shopping history.
Oh, do you?
I don't know. I shop online a lot, but a lot of times it's just through Amazon. So maybe that's my limiting factor.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh yeah, you need to go to other places. Yeah. I mean, I get ads for Anthropology. I get ads for servers. I get ads for
the sharing of, I don't know if this is true, but it feels like the sharing of actual acquisition behavior is not as, so there's lots of sharing of, hey, you searched for this or you went to this page and it's about this, but there isn't a whole lot of sharing of you acquired this at a specific because everybody wants to hang on to that data, I guess, because it's so important.
Because they think it's so important. I argue that actually a lot of this data is not just useless, but it's actively irritating. So
Agreed.
And they tout the benefits, but I don't know. Doesn't feel like a whole lot of benefits there. You were talking about automation a little bit. Kind of ties into an Amazon announcement, which when I read this, I was like, oh, this Stacey would probably be, this might be right up your alley. Amazon announced support for contact and motion sensors with its voice assistant.
We just talked about that this morning. Okay, I'm sorry. I just totally got excited. Finish your sentence.
Good. Excellent. That's what I was hoping for. It's just tying into the capabilities of automation in your home. So open the door, for example, for home automation as a trigger for home automation. Maybe that, you know, sets something else off when a contact is removed from a motion sensor or a Zigbee sensor. I'm not really quite sure. Maybe you should describe it because I feel like I'm a little complicated.
Okay,
and you're so excited, so go for it.
Amazon has created an API for manufacturers. So this isn't for you and I. This is going to be companies that make products. They can add this to their Madam A. Do we say the name here on this show? What do we do?
No, we don't.
Okay.
I like Madam A. So let's just do that. That works.
All right. So the Madam A's, so your skill will have this. So the first company that is doing something with it is SmartThings. So if you have one of two Zigbee-related SmartThings sensors, you can actually bring them into an Amazon routine. So that's one. The other is the Amazon Echo Plus, which has the Zigbee radio in it. But so far, it only works with the Centralite and Sylvania sensors. So really what this is a notification to all the manufacturers of Zigbee devices, basically. Hey, you could totally tie your sensors in. And I am really excited about it. But this is my one beef with Amazon. I have lots of beefs actually, but this is a big one. Every time they do this, because it's so piecemeal, I have to go through and rewrite and rename and redo routines, and it drives me absolutely bonkers. So that is how I feel about that. And I have not tried this out with my one SmartThings sensor that can use it yet. So I haven't done it yet. That's the other part.
So what would be the benefit? Like walk me through what would it allow me to do?
So I could create a routine. It basically gives Amazon the ability that a lot of like smart home platforms already have. So like if I have certain types of hubs, I can already like program when detecting motion at a certain time, turn on the porch light, right?
Okay.
So that gives you that kind of routine. I still don't know how that's going to be implemented as an Amazon routine. So that's the part where I'm like, I need to play with it and try it. But I haven't been home I've been home a day, but I haven't done it yet. I know, I'm so lazy.
Not good enough.
Yeah, come on, get on the ball, Stacey.
I was installing light switches this afternoon, and yesterday I was kind of trying to figure out where I was.
Yeah, I like the idea of triggering other things with these sensors. I think, and actually, I was reading through this. And I was like, yeah, Google Home needs to have this too. Obviously, that's how I feel. They all will.
So, eventually. Oh, yeah. So what they need to develop, and what I'm unclear is if this is going to do something like this, is you could just tell, hey, Madam A, if my front door bell camera sees motion, do this. And then it actually writes that routine for you. That would be amazing.
Yeah.
And that's where they're trying to get to, but I don't think this actually does that. So, bummer. That's going to happen.
Yeah.
It will happen.
Speaking of Amazon, $1 trillion.
You have to do the thing. There you go. Yeah, Dr. Evil.
Sorry, I'm not sitting in Leo's Dr. Evil chair, so I can only halfway
do
it.
You need to pet your hairless cat, too.
Yes.
Exactly, yeah.
$1 trillion market cap milestone has been achieved. It was brief, but it happened on Tuesday, and I think it dropped down to a paltry $995
billion. Is that all?
Whatever. I don't know where it's at today, but... Not bad, Amazon. Maybe someday I'll be a trillion-dollar company too.
I find it, well, I guess as a former stock market reporter, I find the obsession with sort of round numbers bizarre.
Yeah.
I mean, mm-hmm. I know it's human nature, but you know, if it's worth $999 billion, that's still pretty good.
Yes. I would agree.
Or $800 billion.
Yeah, I would agree. But and you know, this is not the first time that this happened. Apple did this early August. So you know, Amazon playing second fiddle to Apple as far as that's concerned. But
it is, guys.
Yeah. What?
So this is their market cap. I'm just thinking about all the ways we could divvy this up and compare and contrast and what would be useful and what would not. But yeah, it's the same point you're making, big round numbers.
Well, and I do think the sort of flip side is that those round numbers do kind of make you stop and think a little, you know, just about how big these companies are.
Yeah.
And maybe it isn't, you know, revenue. It's the stock market, and they're anticipating all sorts of future benefits that may never appear, but that's still a pretty staggering sum.
Scooterack says today $972.96 billion. So,
oh, is that all?
Yeah,
yeah. Come back next week.
We'll check back again. And actually, related, I moved away from Madam A, but I should mention also that apparently Amazon says Madam A operates on more than 20,000 devices now. So Amazon is clearly winning the compatibility game.
Right. Extensibility.
Yes.
Well, okay. Yes. And it is the number one. When I talk to anybody who's building a device, they're like, yes, Madam A is our first option or our first priority, followed by Google Home. But that's also a lot of crappy. There's a lot of crappy things on there, right? So it doesn't matter if you have 20K if you don't have the most important ones, right? Amazon does tend to right now still have the most important ones. So I'm not worried about it. But again, I'm like, let's be real, you guys.
Yeah, it's a good point. I remember that with the Google Play Store before it was the Play Store, when it was the Android market. And it was like, yeah, well, we've got tons of apps too to compete against Apple. Yeah. And it's like, yeah, but most of them aren't.
We have 80,000. Pieces of garbage that will crash your phone.
Yes.
It's most of the stuff there that you're going to find is not very good. Thankfully, they've improved that over the years. But
they have.
Indeed.
Actually, I had an interesting, this is a tangent, but I was talking to someone about Google's desire to get into China and Facebook's as well, obviously. And they made an argument that obviously I thought, well, Google wants to get into China. It's a massive market, et cetera, et cetera. You know, they want to compete with Baidu and so on. But his point was, I'd be interested what you guys thought, but his point was that he saw the big draw as being Android. So that something like 80% of devices in China are Android, but that it's a kind of lawless frontier because Google can't, you know, can't act in the country and sort of control it the way they do elsewhere. Mm-hmm. And that's a big kind of driver for them, is to just get in there and get control of that massive Android market.
I think that's a justification as opposed to a rationalization, not a justification. I don't know what I'm saying.
Interesting theory, though.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah. I don't. Yeah.
Let's see here. Let's, I don't know what I have to
you
say.
You want to talk
about
the URL? Because I was I thought that was kind of cool, but I don't know if you want to talk about that.
Yes, I do. Let's talk about that. After we take a break.
After the break.
Stay tuned. The URL may be changing. All that and more coming up next. But first, this episode of This Week in Google is brought to you by WordPress. You know WordPress. They are all over the internet. When so many people, when you need a website, WordPress is there, right? To make the whole process easy for you. If you've got a vision, you choose WordPress.com, because really, literally, you don't get any limits in the process. You're free to create the ultimate online hub. It's yours. It gives you room to grow as you aim to take it, you know, and grow it, expand it, take it higher. You can turn your vision into reality and launch your website on WordPress.com, and you'll see exactly what I'm talking about. On WordPress.com, you can choose from hundreds of designs that you just saw to match your vision. You can establish your brand around that vision, no matter how much design experience you have. And that's the beauty of it, right? Like, we're not all designers. We're not all web designers. I know for myself, I was never very good, even though I wanted to get a WYSIWYG editor and prove to myself that I could do it. WordPress makes it super easy. Lots of awesome designs to choose from. It's hassle-free. So WordPress takes care of the hosting, the security, the software updates, all the hard stuff so you can focus on your site, the most important part of that to you. You can upload images, video, audio, and a whole lot more. Plus, you can import and export content to and from your WordPress website. It's your site, after all, your home, so it's your content online. You can grow your audience, reach new customers with built-in SEO, social media features integrated into WordPress, and marketing tools that make it easy for you to extend your reach. With the WordPress app, you can actually manage your site on the go. It's right there on the mobile app. Do all the things you need to do while you're sitting on the bus, you know, on your commute. You can also launch your website with confidence, knowing that you can get help from a 24/7 support team anytime you need it. There's someone there to talk to. WordPress plans start at just $4 per month. And like I said, they're all over the internet. In fact, 31% of all websites run on WordPress, which is a pretty staggering number when you think about it. Right now, get 15% off any new plan purchase. All you have to do is go to wordpress.com/twig to create your website. That's wordpress.com/twig, and you'll get 15% off your new website. WordPress.com/twig, and we thank WordPress for their support. The URLs are a-changing, as they say. But we don't really know what they're changing to. Like, this was a Wired story that basically says
sounds
that Google...
like it's pretty up in the air.
Yeah, Google's focusing some efforts, focusing time and resources to fix what they say is just a big problem in the fact that URLs are complicated, they're complex, they're confusing. They say that it's going to be controversial, but everyone's unsatisfied with them. What do you think, Stacey?
So I saw this story and I was like, well, you know, one of the reasons this is a problem is because URLs are often turned into like tracking URLs, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Not always. I mean, there are definitely pages that have poor naming.
Almost
but
always.
A lot of the weirdest gobbledygook is totally tracking stuff. So maybe if we didn't have to track that, maybe we should, I don't know.
Just get rid of tracking.
Maybe if no one needed to make money.
Right. Get rid of tracking and ads.
But you're right. Whenever I share links or post links, I remove all the gobbledygook deliberately.
Yeah.
So that
I try to.
No one can make money from that link. But it is.
Although I will
problem.
Say, as a publisher who puts... I my ads have tracking codes thing. Tied to, I clicked on this from Stacey. I'm like, hey, don't remove that. That's really helpful to me. Thank you.
See? Now the shoe's on the other foot.
Yeah, I know. Everybody has a reason for those tracking. Yeah. Once it's your reason, the story
They did
changes.
Try this before, though, right? I think the Wired story mentions that. They did try, because I remember a period where if you clicked on a link in Chrome, the URL bar would just show you a truncated version. So it just showed you, I think, the main domain and maybe one kind of slash mark. It didn't show you the full thing. Yeah, subdomain.
Well, yeah, if I remember correctly, it showed that to you. But if you actually went up there and copied it and then pasted that link into another browser window, you'd get the full thing.
So, yeah.
And I don't know if that full thing included the tracking information or not. But
yeah, but I think they just hid the actual URL.
Yeah.
So it would show you something, but if you clicked and pasted it, then you'd get the real one.
I wonder why they didn't keep that.
Yeah, I don't know.
Some people complained.
Because I mean, I guess we're always staring at the URL bar. Sometimes that can be a great indicator of something.
Something.
Well, no, I mean of good or bad, right? Like you would check the URL and maybe there's clues in there that if it's hiding it from you, you'd be less likely to detect that something bad was happening. Or I'm not really quite sure.
And you're wondering.
In other words, something.
Yeah. I know I find it irritating when I'm checking links in a newsletter or some places that deliberately obscure the URL, I hover over a link.
Yeah.
And then I look down to see where is it going. You know, is it something that I actually want to click on and go and look at? And if the URL is obscured, it's harder to make that decision.
Yeah. Yes.
That
so
is true.
I wouldn't imagine changes anytime soon. Well, this it really sounds like it's a very nebulous discussion happening right now.
But at least they're trying to do, sure. It sounds to me like they're trying to do it for a good reason, unlike, say, Facebook, which deliberately obscured URLs because it didn't want you to click on them and leave Facebook.
Right.
True right. That.
ScooterX put something in the chat room that might be worth talking about. It's Ooh. About Google's deal with MasterCard that came out a while back.
That's right. Yeah.
A few days back. I don't know if that's in our rundown because
I don't see it in our rundown.
That was the deal where they were getting purchase activity.
Well, so this is the question I have. So Bloomberg reported that Google has apparently paid millions of dollars to get credit card data from MasterCard. Now, and this is a recent story, and Bloomberg says it's new reporting. But back in 2017, Google actually had talked about a deal with an unnamed data broker or data provider to get credit card information. So I'm not sure if the unnamed data provider from that story was MasterCard or if this is new. And
so I remember reading, do you follow Lauren Weinstein, the privacy forum? So he's got a blog about Google. Yeah. So he said that he thought this was kind of a trumped up story. Sorry for the verb, but that it was a deal that they announced last year. And it doesn't involve individual purchasers by identity. And so he saw it as a kind of, you know, they were trotting out an old story. But I don't know if that's, I haven't looked into it.
I mean, I read the story and it's tremendously unclear if it's the same. I will say that Google's not alone in this. I noticed this in a couple other places. For example, Nordstrom's does a deal with Facebook. So anytime I buy something at Nordstrom's, it actually shares that data with Facebook.
Does it post it on your wall?
It's not posted on my wall, but Facebook does know what I bought.
That it was you? Or just that somebody bought
it? No, that it was me. It is some of the direct tracking, which is why I'm like, I don't sign into Facebook a lot of the time. But now that I've got a site, I am signed in and
We were talking about that acquisition data, like people actually buying things is the most, at least lots of companies think it's the most salient.
It is because we're speaking with our dollars. And so that's how you know someone's about to have a baby because they're buying baby stuff.
Yeah.
Or. So it makes total sense, but it's like really creepy. So there we go.
It is definitely. There's that sort of Target example about the girl who was buying pregnancy related stuff. And
right.
They sent an email to her dad. It's like, what?
Yeah, a couple of years ago.
Well, yeah, they didn't send it to him as like a, by the way, your daughter's pregnant. They sent it you could buy more stuff.
Yeah.
Would you like more diapers?
No, it was totally innocent. Totally innocent.
So I think this does look back because the justification in the Bloomberg story and the justification in the original Washington Post story from 2017 is the same. It's basically tying the data from me clicking on an ad to actually purchasing something. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's the holy grail, right? Like you clicking on an ad means little to nothing. You actually buying something shortly after you clicked on an ad is huge.
Right. So.
Google did point out you can opt out of this ad tracking as, you know, if you didn't already know. Web and app activity, you can go into the online console and do that. And that would,
and then you won't
this.
Get anything useful.
No, but yes, that's true. But then I really think about it. I'm like, how much do I really care about whether my ads are targeted? Like, is that an okay trade-off?
I do care because not that I buy weird stuff, but I feel like the things, because once you know what I'm buying, you know what's in my home, and you know way more about me than. One, I'm aware that I'm sharing, maybe, but also I don't think my ability to determine the weather, for example. So Google offer, like, there should be different levels of tracking associated. Like, if I turn this off, what do I lose? If I just lose Google giving me better ads, that's fine. If I lose the ability for Google to, like, they're like, well, fine, then we're going to pretend we don't have access to your location or other information, and so we won't automatically show you the following things that you rely on and think are convenient, right? Mm-hmm. So the question is, do we have some sort of striations in what I share versus what services get taken away? Does that make sense?
Kind of the trade-off.
MasterCard said no individual transaction or personal data is provided.
Yeah, but the example they give is incredibly misleading then. The example they give in this story is I click on an ad for red lipstick. A lady clicks on an ad for red lipstick and later with her MasterCard goes and buys that red lipstick. The advertiser gets a report indicating as such. So it may not say Stacy does, but it is definitely linked to my activity in Google because I am logged in, knows who I am. So MasterCard may not get it, but they know it was me. They know I like red lipstick.
The question is whether someone knows that it's you, presumably MasterCard.
Mm. No, presumably
Google. Do they share that with Google?
No. Yeah. They have to share that with Google if Google's tying it to my click. Once it's tied to my click, it's tied to me. I mean, I'm not saying maybe it's a really terrible example, but if that's the example, then somebody's not telling the whole truth.
Yeah.
Seriously, who's buying red lipstick these days, huh?
Yeah.
I have 16 red lipsticks. I have been on the hunt, actually.
And Google is aware of that.
Google knows. They're Google knows. Oh, Stacy, lay off Sephora, man.
What else do we have here? I think we've got kind of pieces and bits and pieces here and there. Like, there were some devices announced at IFA. I don't know how interesting that is for you guys. I mean, there was a number of smartphones that were announced there. Sony Xperia XZ3. The Huawei Honor Play, a lot of like mid-range devices, HTC U12 Life. Actually, the HTC phone looks very similar to the Pixel 2, which, if you remember, HTC was involved in the Pixel 2's design, so it makes a lot of sense that they would have some similarities, but the backing on that looks very, very similar, very familiar. ZTE Axon 9, there was a new BlackBerry phone, I think, but I don't know if there were any
there were some new home appliances that are connected to the internet.
So you were probably paying more attention, to kind of the IoT stuff that was happening at IFA. What do you think of IFA as far as a conference for that type of product?
I was devastated that I could not go, except I didn't go because I was in Banff doing the hiking thing. So I was devastated. I was devastated, but I was also like, yeah, I'm not going to give that up.
Right.
So I did try to convince Kevin to go on our behalf, and Kevin was like, eh. And I was like, oh, fine.
Would you normally be there if you weren't banned?
I would. Next year I would be there. Okay. Next year I'll plan a little bit better. Because I think it's a really interesting show. A lot of the higher end appliance vendors are showing off fully integrated kitchens, for example. So couple things worth noting. GE announced that you no longer have to talk to its digital assistant with its kitchen stuff. You can now just talk to Madam A. So instead of saying, Madam A, ask Geneva to set the oven to 350, you can just say, Madam A, set the oven to 350. Why does this matter? Because it makes interoperability a little bit easier. So as long as now that Madam A has native support for ovens, anybody who makes an oven can do it, and we no longer have to worry about, remembering that my dishwasher's by Bosch, my oven's by Geneva or GE, and my fridge is by Samsung. Yeah. So that's cool. We also saw, this is maybe a worrying trend, is it Miele? How do you say the really high-end meal? Miele?
Miele, I think.
Miele? They launched some products, including a new disc for their dishwashers, which you're like, oh, okay. But what it really seems like is a way to actually buy specially branded soap. And it's unclear if you're going to be able to not buy their, like, through their channels with this particular product. It is another company did the same thing with refrigerators and water filters and kind of used connectivity to insert some extra DRM there. So that's something to keep an eye on. And I think it's a really crappy thing for consumers.
Yeah, this is ridiculous. A power disc, a round puck that dispenses powder detergent. So you buy these discs or do you fill up the disc?
You do. I think you buy the discs.
Oh, cool. Why? To what benefit other than Miele or meal or whatever?
Well, they're going to argue that it cleans your dishes better, does something fancy, and reduces buildup in your dishwasher. You know, all the typical. I mean, we know what they're going to say.
That's lame, though.
It is lame, and it is frustrating that instead of offering truly better services, and maybe they are, maybe that's how they'll get you in. Like, I would love a dishwasher that can detect exactly how much filth is on my dishes and clean them appropriately using the minimum amount of water, for example. That would be something worth paying for. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if it's worth paying for if it also locks me into this stupid proprietary revenue generating dishwasher soap, right? Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, and they're not small either. Those discs are actually pretty large. They're going to take up a lot of space. And if you're running your dishwasher once a day, that seems like that's going to be a pretty expensive endeavor.
Although the trend in dishwashers, you guys, is drawers. Having multiple drawers with your dishwashers that you just put open the drawer in your counter, you stick the dishes in, you set it to wash overnight, and then you've got maybe another one, and you can just open that, pull from there.
What?
Huh?
So multiple drawers that operate independently.
As a dishwasher. So yeah, so it's aimed at smaller households who don't run dishwasher every day. Load.
Okay.
I love them. They're very pretty. I'm like, oh.
Interesting.
So like little mini dishwashers throughout your kitchen?
Yeah, just two.
Just two.
I mean, I guess you could.
Every drawer is a new dishwasher. Put your dirty
and
dishes
some
in the
might
drawer
only have
they
one.
Come out clean. That's so
Why
weird.
Isn't
some people
the
might only have
drawer?
One. I would have two.
That's so bizarre.
No, it's really neat. Oh, someone's asking for both.
Yeah, show us a picture.
I'm Googling dishwasher drawers just to see.
Yeah,
I have never heard of this.
I haven't either.
Really?
No, this is
okay.
Never. I'm not up on dishwasher technology. So
no, I haven't really followed.
Here, okay, there's in Remodelista. If you Google dishwasher drawers, there's a story, Jason, just a little bit down called Remodeling 101, the ins and outs of dishwasher drawers. And they show.
Okay.
They show the drawers. So you can
putting
see.
I'm putting this in other in the doc because it is definitely other.
Yes. Sorry, you guys.
I know. I love tangents like this. Okay, so I put the link in there.
And you scroll all the way down at the bottom.
Yeah, there's like the third picture down if you end up going there. And here, I'll put it in chat so people have it too. There you go. If you go down to the third picture, you'll get a good shot of it. That's the second. It's interior. And look at that.
See, so yeah, the idea is it's for, you know, it's space saving and you run that dishwasher just once a day for small households. And then you basically could just, you don't even have to put your dishes away. You pull from the clean one and run from the dirty one. I would put mine away, but that's just me.
Yeah. Yeah, I probably would too. I'd have my kids do it.
Right.
So so it kind of doesn't matter. That's interesting. I had not heard of this.
So that's a big tip. That's like a trend.
Yeah, apparently. So.
It's not smart and has no tech.
I mean, going to say, is Madame A integrated with these dishwashers? Can we rope it into technology somehow?
Eventually they will be.
Yeah.
I mean, sure.
Madame A, wash the dishes.
One of the most exciting things, I was talking to somebody about connected appliances, actually, and they were talking about once something's connected to the network, you can have accurate timing. And so for people like me who like want to sync my microwave and my oven clocks because they're right next to each other all to the same time, that's perfect because the internet will actually do it. Right now, I have to set them like.
Thank God.
I know.
That would be great.
Some people, this really obsessed. Like my husband and I, we all have a person in front of their, we all like are like synchronized with the time set. And we're all right. Like, okay, and go. Yeah. We all press our buttons. That will be a thing of the past.
Yeah. Good. The future looks bright.
For OCD people everywhere.
Yes, exactly. It's enabling our everyone's OCD, inner OCD. Hey, you know, I had not realized last time I was on, There was no slot in the rundown for the changelog. Why don't we do the changelog?
You're on it, man.
The Google changelog.
I love that this is back. Although I have to say those icons and the Google logo, a little dated. But I guess the changelog hasn't been a thing for a while. Happy birthday to Google. 1 year shy of drinking age here in the U.S. 20 years ago yesterday was the date that Google Incorporated was incorporated. Google Inc. was incorporated 20 years ago. So happy birthday, Google. It's good to see you. You're looking good. Get a job. Chrome is also celebrating its 10-year birthday, always living in Google's birthday's shadow. About halfway. There's a new look to the desktop browser. I don't know if you guys saw this, actually. My Pixel book updated, and I was surprised. I hadn't read this story, so I wasn't expecting it, and things look awesome.
What do you think?
I like it. Yeah, I really like Google's current kind of design era.
Aesthetic?
The aesthetic, the material theming that they're doing. I don't know. It's very pleasing. I think that they've done a good job kind of refining it to where it's at right now. So now that's integrated with Chrome. You got some other updates like improvements to autofill, password management, including integrated password creation. So that's something I love about LastPass. And now Chrome's going to have that embedded as well. So you can create your passwords and not keep reusing the same ones over and over again. So make sure and check that out. The Chrome update is available to you now. Google Assistant is apparently now bilingual. So if you are in a home with, you know, and maybe there are two languages spoke in your home, Assistant can now interchangeably talk and recognize and all that between two languages at once. That's neat. I think that's going to help.
That is neat.
Yeah.
Good idea.
And that will work, obviously, across all assistant functions. So controlling your smart home, all other functions. I think it'll be good for the home. And then this is important stuff. Google is offering a free content safety API toolkit to non-governmental agencies. That's going to put its artificial intelligence work and its neural network kind of efforts to task on recognizing and flagging child sexual abuse material online, also known as CSAM. Basically what this means is it's going to allow for recognition at scale and kind of minimizing the interaction, the need for human operators to filter through a lot of the stuff. Up until now, it's been...
That would be helpful.
It's been the task of a lot of humans to have
it's
to...
A terrible job.
Oh, I can't even imagine. Yeah. So they've got their AI on the case. It's going to help assist in flagging known CSAM content for review and then also recognizing content that might not have been previously flagged, but that would likely fall into that category. So it's all about kind of minimizing how much the humans actually have to be involved in that process. So, and then that's free. So people are going to be able to put that to work right away. Cool. Man, it's been so long since the Google change log. So how do I close this? That was the Google change log. I'm out of practice on the change log. I love that it's back, though.
I really appreciate your like thinking of things like, oh, how do I close this? Which is like when Kevin and I are recording, we're always like, and that's it. Yeah, we're done. Yeah,
we're done. Over. All right, see you later. Oh, hello.
Oh, someone's coming in with a snack.
Ta-da.
You got mail.
I got a device.
Got
yay.
Hey, what'd you get?
A snack or a glass of wine or something or no?
No, nope. It's I'll show whatever it is. I'm not 100% sure what it is, but I'll show it.
Oh, yes. This is where legendary TV is made.
Yeah, I think it could pay off. Exactly. Yeah.
Surprise. I'm pretty sure it's a smart home device.
Probably.
It might
so.
Be you know, something sure really is. Interesting. Like red lipstick.
You ordered it on Amazon and it delivered right. 20 minutes later. Anything else in here before we take a break and then come back and do our tips and all the other stuff? Did I miss anything? I mean, Snapchat spectacles, apparently. There's a new version of them, and they look even more like normal sunglasses. But do they look enough like normal sunglasses? That is the question.
Yeah.
Wait, is anyone buying these?
Who's I don't know.
Yeah, not yet, I don't think. I don't know. Snap seems to really be losing 200? Some momentum.
Yeah, no kidding, eh? Kind of crazy.
Is that a Canadian, eh, right there? Eh?
Yeah.
Thank you for speaking my language.
I've liked A as an expression pretty much my whole life.
Great expression.
And I lived in Montreal for 6 months, so I can at least lay claim to it
there
partially.
There you go. You're
that.
Part Canadian.
Yeah.
You're part Canadian.
So very small part.
Related to the A is in French, n'est-ce pas, but in Louisiana, where my family's from, they say for true. So for true. It's the same really? Concept, true, but they're like, oh, for true?
For so, true.
For true. So there you go.
Doesn't quite.
It's interesting.
Roll
off. Canadians don't say A nearly as much as Americans think they do.
They do too.
It's actually not that. It is common in some parts of Canada, but not all parts.
It's like I've encountered many Canadians saying A, including you, Matthew.
Maybe they said it for you. Maybe they said it just for you.
I always thought A was a pretty efficient way to prompt someone to reply. That's why I always used it. It's a great way to, like, you put that out there and someone feels the need to respond. So it serves.
And, of course, in the Midwest, you know, in sort of Minnesota, North Dakota, it's yay.
Yeah.
Yay.
Yeah, you don't need to nest them. You don't need to stack them. Then it's not as efficient. But, hey, everybody has their own way of aying.
Stacy could tell us about the proper conjunction or, you know, derivation of all and all y'all.
All y'all? Oh, man. Yeah.
All y'all. That's not acceptable.
But y'all's acceptable.
Yeah, but yeah. All y'all is all just y'all? Silly.
No? Yeah, all y'all.
Oh, is it? Oh, I thought that was standard. No. Oh, okay.
All y'all? No. What? No, no that's just silly.
I don't know why you do that.
So y'all is just you, and then all y'all is the group.
But y'all is all.
Is already a group?
Is already all.
But y'all also just...
Y'all to me implies more than one person.
More than
y'all.
One person? But correct me if I'm wrong. People use it for just a single person as well.
Yeah, probably
you
so.
You are correct, however they are wrong.
Carson has ruled.
Okay. Got it. Thank you.
Glad we got to the bottom of that. All right, let's take a break. Thank the sponsor of this episode, and then we'll get back and do some tips, tricks, numbers, whatever we happen to have in store. Things is another one. But before all that, This Week in Google is brought to you by DigitalOcean. DigitalOcean actually provides the easiest cloud platform. If you want to deploy, manage, scale applications, you can use Droplets, virtual machines that are a scalable compute platform with add-on storage, security, and monitoring capabilities. You can actually choose from standard or CPU-optimized Droplets and then customize from there. And, you know, if I'm talking your language, that's probably because you're a developer. DigitalOcean is designed for developers. It has an easy-to-use control panel as well as an API that lets developers spend more time coding, which is what they always want to do anyways, and less time managing their infrastructure. That's what DigitalOcean can do. Industry-leading price to performance. You can access the compute resources that you need at the lowest rates. That's going to save up to 55% when compared to other cloud providers. Nothing to sneeze at. And you'll always know what you'll pay per month with a flat pricing structure across all data center regions. Not only that, you get a whole bunch of other stuff included at no additional cost. You get 99.99% uptime SLA. You get cloud firewalls, monitoring and alerting, full DNS management, global data centers, enterprise SSDs, an easy-to-use API. Developers are going to love this. Over 150,000 businesses, including some of the world's fastest-growing startups, rely on DigitalOcean to remove infrastructure friction and deliver industry-leading price performance. Sign up today, and you're going to receive a free $100 credit. All you have to do is go to do.co/twig. That's do.co/twig. Go there. You're going to get a free $100 credit for DigitalOcean. And we thank DigitalOcean for their support of This Week in Google. All right. So let's see here. I'm going to scroll down here. And Stacey, why don't we start with you? Do you have a thing that was just shipped? Is that what that was?
So this thing I can't show you yet,
okay,
sadly. But I do have a thing that I can show you the website for, because I don't have the thing yet.
Cool.
But I really want it. And it is weird. So this is part of the Stacey Shows You Weird Things that you may want. This is the Lumos Sleep. Yeah, that's a segment. Did y'all not know that? Lumos Sleep Mask. And what it does is it flashes light in your eyes to prevent jet lag.
What?
Huh?
It is a $200 sleeping mask that you can purchase. And it will...
How does that prevent jet lag?
You tell it when you're going to fly and where you're going. And then it starts with, through the app, prompting you to sleep with it the night before or spend some time with it the day before. And it flashes lights in your eyes while you sleep to help acclimate your brain.
To help you adjust. Got it.
Yeah.
Got it.
So CNET tried this, which is where I found out about it. And this person actually said that it seemed helpful for her flight to Australia. As someone who's been to Australia from the U.S., it is not going that is problematic. It is coming back. So we'll see. But I really want to try it before I go to Europe in a couple of weeks. So that's my goal.
I want to know what you got. Why can't you tell us?
Because it's a secret for
but
a certain amount of time.
But we'll just keep it between us.
Just between us.
Just between you and me.
Yeah, here, let me turn off the stream 1 second.
Yeah.
Hold on.
Turn off the show.
Okay, Carson turned off the stream. Okay,
go.
Seriously,
there
you can tell us
go.
Now. No one will ever know.
No one will ever know. Yes, no, I'm sorry, you guys. I got excited, but then I was like, oh, this is not what I thought it was.
All right. Yeah. Fair enough. Matthew, why don't you tell us what was delivered to you? Huh? What did you get delivered?
Do you want to know the last thing I had? The last thing I had delivered.
No, actually, you can talk about anything you want. Do you have a Matthew's stuff or a number?
Last thing I had delivered was a Lightning to Ethernet connector because my iPad Wi-Fi Bluetooth radio suddenly stopped working for no reason.
So, okay.
Admittedly, it's an old iPad, but
okay.
Anyway, so I was going to mention. I saw this in the rundown. We didn't talk about it. I don't have a thing. Because everything I use is old and busted. And so I don't have anything new like Stacey. My light bulbs, you have to twist and they don't change colors or do anything like that. So, but I did notice that Twitter was talking about some new features. And this company never ceases to amaze me. So they were saying they're experimenting with new features to help make the platform more conversational. So, for example, they would show you when someone was online. And I thought, and I saw a couple of people responding to it like, that is the last thing that we really want. So Twitter arguably is too conversational already in a lot of ways in terms of bad conversation. Do we need to show people when we're online so they can come and, you know, beat us up about something or troll us hard about whatever it was we just said? I just found it, I don't know, it's like there are parts of the company that, you know, this is all well-meaning features, but there are parts of the company that don't seem to be aware of the real problems with Twitter and how these features might not help, I guess.
Yeah, it's like their different departments are, it's like business as usual, just continue iterating and coming up with interesting features. And I mean, this is not the only time this has happened too, where Twitter's put out an update and then there's, you know, I've seen many times where an update to the service happens and all I see on social media is like, you know, why don't you instead focus on fixing your social network? You know, like
it's become a meme now. As soon as Jack says something about we are doing X, the number one response is, why don't you get rid of the Nazis first?
Right.
Or give us an edit function.
Yeah.
And then you can change hearts to stars or stars to hearts or whatever.
Do you want an edit function on Twitter, Matthew? I'm curious.
I actually sort of go back and forth. I think it could be done provided there was a very short window.
Yeah.
So if there was a window where right after you typed it, you know, some email programs have this, right after you typed it, you're like, ah, crap. You know, I said that and I meant this, or I spelled this person's name wrong, or then you have, I don't know, a minute, 30 seconds maybe to change it. Obviously, there's all kinds of trouble you could get into if there was just a unilateral at all times edit function. So I definitely see why that would be a bad thing.
Yeah, I would agree with that. If it's like, or maybe it's even as short as it is on like in Google, in Inbox or Gmail.
Yeah.
I have my undo send, and I think that only holds it for 10 seconds. It's a short window, but it's long enough. You know what I mean? It's long enough for me to send it and then do that quick scan and be like, oh man, I typed that person's name wrong. You know, and knowing that it doesn't actually post, maybe in the Twitter feed, you send it, it appears in your feed, but it hasn't actually appeared for everyone for another 10 seconds. That way you see it in context, you know you can make it the change. And yeah, I think that would be the way to do it. What do you think?
I mean, obviously they have other things they need to work on.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, for sure. But they've also got to iterate. What do you think, Stacey? Edit, yes or no? Edit YN.
Twitter, yes or no? Are you even on Twitter
anymore? Matthew, Stacey? I'm like, God, I've done some stupid tweets, but I understand why they don't want us to have it. I'll be controversial.
Go ahead. I thought you were about to be controversial.
Oh, sure. Oh no, I said in. No, I don't think we should have an edit button.
Oh, okay. All right.
That's controversial. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I don't like puppies.
I know that whenever there is an immutable Twitter law, or maybe it's a law of the universe, that whenever a tweet of yours goes viral, it will have a typo in it.
Oh, yes.
So
all the tweets that you type that where you check everything and spelling's perfect, nothing happens to them. But the one that everybody will share will have some dumb mistake in it.
I'm going to start misspelling every single tweet I send out. Then. See how
it goes viral.
You don't want it to go viral because
I don't. And in the times, I mean, I had that unboxing video of the Amazon box there was an Oreo cookie. And I mean, the box was gigantic and there was a single Oreo cookie package in the bottom of that. And I mean, in the case of my Twitter feed, that may be one of the most viral things I've ever had. And that quickly, a box with Oreo cookies quickly became political in my feed. I mean, it totally like I'm a horrible person because blah, blah, blah. I'm just like, whoa, they're cookies.
Yeah. I didn't know they were going to pack them so poorly.
He did this on purpose to blah, blah, blah. I was like, I promise you there's no conspiracy theory. I just wanted to eat some cookies.
That's a classic Twitter experience.
Yes.
Like you and I are chatting and I say, yeah, I just never really liked, pancakes that much. And then 20 minutes later, someone is calling someone a Nazi or alleging that, you know, it's a conspiracy of some kind.
But Twitter doesn't need fixing.
No, it's a great conversational platform. It's a town square, as Jack Dorsey said.
I still like Twitter.
I mean, I still use Twitter. I don't use Twitter as much as I used to. I browse Twitter pretty regularly.
Yeah.
I don't post much anymore.
No comment. Yeah.
And
I'm the same.
I used to comment all the time.
I've started.
Yeah, Matthew, you have really tapered off. Where do you talk now?
Well, in the summer, I talk actually to people in real life.
In real life.
Yeah.
What is that?
It's an overlooked medium, but I guess I scaled back partly because it was summertime and I have other things that, you know, in the winter, you're just sitting in your house and it's freezing cold in Canada, not in Texas, obviously.
And, I was like, because you live in Canada.
Yeah. So there's nothing else to do, you know, but shovel the driveway or get on Twitter. So I'll probably be back more than before, but I have been reconsidering it. It does, I'm not sure it's good. It's a great news source and it's a great way of getting information. I'm not sure it's a great place to spend a lot of time, and it can be kind of emotionally draining, and it can be kind of a, it's certainly a time suck. So
absolutely,
trying to find other ways to occupy my time.
Yeah.
Agreed.
My thing, I guess this would constitute a thing. Google, you may remember a few weeks ago or a little while back, made mention of the Titan security key, which was its two-factor authentication security key. It's now available, and actually I think it had been sold out for a while. I just checked the store. You can buy it right now. The kit's available for $50, ships immediately. You get a USB key, a Bluetooth key, and then you get some adapter connectors, which I included a screenshot of one of their promotional photos, Google's photos, for how you would plug this into your Pixelbook. So it's right underneath this link. Because it doesn't have a USB-C version of the key. So every time you want to use your ultra-secure Titan security key, you've got to have another dongle in there, which is just, you know, but seriously.
Is
this a replacement for the YubiKey or different from YubiKey?
Similar. Yeah, it's basically the same thing.
Okay.
It's Google's own version of the YubiKey.
And our YubiKeys, so maybe, I don't know if you guys know this, but if I use Authenticator, you know, on my watch or whatever, is a hard key like that noticeably better security? Like, is it dramatically better?
I think that they consider it to be a step up from something like that, actually having a hardware key that has to plug into the port. I haven't used one myself. And actually, this kind of ties in with Google has the advanced protection feature that they announced like late last year, I think it was. That's really, you know, it's like this next level hardware two-step verification kind of account setting that was really designed for people like, you know, journalists or politicians or people who have high risk sort of jobs as far as their data and, you know, what would happen if that got out. So
I use two-factor on almost everything.
Yeah.
Like I use two-factor for like Dropbox and Gmail and like just about everything. And so I'm definitely a believer in actually Zeynep Tufekci, who you mentioned, is a big fan of the YubiKey and says that every sort of activist or journalist should have one.
Yeah. And I think this might be, I think I read somewhere that this is more than anything built for Google accounts specifically. So I don't know if that means that it won't work on other accounts that support hardware keys. Be surprised if that was the case. But anyways, there you go. $50. You can get it right now if you like. I think I might order
$50?
One. $50?
What?
Test it out. Yeah, it seems pretty steep, to be honest.
$50? It seems high. You can get a free YubiKey if you subscribe to Wired.
I was thinking. Subscribe to Wired and get a YubiKey.
When we're talking about two-factor, I have been following efforts by companies to like really push this. So Google is very like, hey, by the way, you should add two-factor. It's much better, right? And then MailChimp, which I use for my newsletter, they actually give a 10% discount when you use two-factor, which is a nice incentive. And then a couple weeks ago, like 2 weeks ago, Fortnite basically introduced kids to two-factor by giving them a premium dance for free if they enabled it.
What?
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
That's cool.
So
that's cool.
Since we're talking about two-factor, and I think it's a big deal and important, I think like pointing out when companies do things to encourage their users, because it is inconvenient. So you do have to make it convenient for people to actually change how they're already doing it.
Yeah.
So go Fortnite.
Yeah, I do remember reading that. That was, I was pretty interested in that. Hopefully kids don't end up locking themselves out because I mean, there is that significant risk with a two-factor.
Yeah, there sure is. It looks like Android Police said the Titan security key, a hardware two-factor bundle with outdated connectors. That was basically their thumbnail review because it's no C and Bluetooth NFC only for Android.
right.
and iOS.
So they've got room to grow. Top for another idea, item probably. In their product line. All right. I think that's it. We've reached the end of This Week in Google for this week. And Matthew, I'm super stoked. Anytime you have the chance to hop on, I really appreciate it.
Oh, thanks.
Thank you for joining us tonight.
Thanks for having me.
CJR.org at Matthew I on Twitter. Anything you're working on? Well, I guess you just posted what you were working on today, so people can go and read
that. I did,
yeah.
Definitely following that and some other cool stuff. So, you know, check back. Follow me on Twitter.
Right on. Thank you, Matthew. And Stacy, of course, always awesome to get the chance to hop on with you as well. The next 2 weeks, I think, you and Jeff are both on the show, so we'll kind of be back.
I'm not on the 19th, but I'll be I'll be here next week.
Cool.
And then the 26th.
Fantastic.
And after we're done, you can show us what you got in the package.
Yeah.
Nope.
We'll shut down the stream. We totally will in post show and not record it and then paste it at the end of today's episode of This Week in Google. Totally
one
won't
day
do that.
You may see it.
Okay. All right.
How's that?
IOTpodcast.com and the Internet of Things newsletter at stacyoniot.com as well. Thanks again, Stacy. Appreciate it. Bye. That is it for this episode. Let's see here. twit.tv/TWIG is where you want to go if you want to check out the site for This Week in Google. There you're going to find everything that you need to know. The time that we record. We record live every Wednesday, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific, 2000 or 2000. I don't know what to say there. UTC. If you want to go to twit.tv/live, you can watch the recording live at those times. But if you want to catch it in podcast, just go to twit.tv/twig and you can find all the links to all of our shows. You can catch up, start from episode one and spend the rest of your life watching This Week in Google and following Google's progress over the years and subscribe to the podcast, of course, from there. I'm Jason Howell. I'll definitely be back next week and I'm really looking forward to it. So thanks for letting me crash your party and we'll see you next week on another episode of This Week in Google. Bye, everybody.